This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Speaking of unhealthy behavior and, I guess, grooming to a certain extent, let's talk about James Burke. He was the guy who was there as part of the original investigation. He was in the police back then, the chief, when all this was going on actively, at least when it seems a lot of the murders took place. And it seems many of them did not get the attention and the manpower that they needed to be further investigated. Obviously, Burke has his own sets of issues that he was charged and arrested for and convicted on. He certainly fits a profile of someone active in that community, of someone who may not want his own choices being exposed if someone were to go down the road of Rex Heuermann. I guess, how does someone like that enable a department and enable investigators to not investigate something like this? It's obviously people are there. They want to keep their jobs and all of that. That may just simply be the answer right there. People are going to be looking out for their own self-interest. But at the same point, it's not like these things were happening in the dark. Other people had to have seen that, hey, we're completely turning a blind eye to these sort of things. How does someone in his type of position at that time, you know, gain other people's trust and don't have others dissenting, saying, hey, no, we really need to fix this. We need to be looking at these things, because it went on for so long in that sort of a structure of law enforcement. How do you think that was playing out, where this was able to go on for so long without a true in-depth investigation?
Here's a possibility. Again, don't know because we're not in the department, but
yeah,
in law enforcement, and think about for yourselves, doing your own thought experiment in any job. I mean, Tony, even you know, with all the great content and cases you cover, you have more coming in than you probably have the ability to put out. And so it's the same thing in law enforcement. When I was at FBI headquarters and I was managing counterintelligence investigations around the country, there's no way I could actually put everything as priority one, because there's just too much. The volume was too high. So sure. What I'm thinking of most likely in these cases, every department has many more cases and investigations that need to be covered than they have resources and personnel for. And so you prioritize and you stack and you restack every day. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to get arrested for if I don't cover? What am I going to get fired for if I don't cover? And what's a great thing that I have to cover because it's a righteous thing to do? And so you kind of have those three piles. And every day restacking these piles based on what's the most critical thing. Now, when you have a boss above you that is supposedly helping you restack this pile, because you still have lots of righteous work to do, mm-hmm. and they might be help you rationalize how we're not going to pay attention to this case because, oh, it's just a sex worker case, or we have all these, instead of saying what not to cover, he might have been saying, hey, here's what's really important to cover first. And once you get done with that, well, then we'll move to this one. Then we'll move to this one. So I don't think, again, if I was him going that deep context from his point of view, if I want someone to not cover something I'm trying to cover in my own footsteps, it's alerting when you tell someone not to do something. It's less alerting when you need them to do something else. And so instead of taking something away, so in other words, don't do this investigation here, that's alerting. I would say, hey, you need to do this, this, and this first. And not even talk about that one. So I think he's probably overloading in one area to keep him distracted so he doesn't go to that area. That would be my context, because he's a smart guy.
Yeah. Well, that
might
makes
be
sense.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
But that's smart. That's what these really horrendous people will do.
Yeah, it's by omission, basically. It's not and it's lying by omission, it's distracting by omission.
I think it's really keeping his people distracted with other righteous work rather than covering this. And downplaying it, rationalizing it, or not just again, the last thing you want to do if you're trying to cover your own tracks in an area is bring attention to that area. So the best way not to bring attention to that area is to keep them focused on something else. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think he's probably doing. He's probably keeping them focused on other investigations.
And yeah, I mean, I guess for his own best interest of what he was involved in, that makes sense. But so many departments, it's a social construct. It's how we view this in our society. I'm not saying it's right, but it is how people view this sort of work, as, you know, well, they almost view people in this area as less than, as, you know, sometimes not even treating them like human beings, you know, more care sometimes for animals than they do for people who are in these horrific situations. And at the end of the day, victims of rape, of sex trafficking, of all these horrible things, these people are victims and they are trying to survive at the end of the day, and they need help. They don't need to be run over a time or two again by some self-righteous warrior who wants to say, you're right, you're wrong, and I deem you morally reprehensible or whatever, which is what we normally get. From an aspect of law enforcement and trying to get behind all of this, trying to get ahead of all of this and get to the deep roots of some of these problems, not only in the sex trafficking area, but other areas of crime, into the drug trade, into so many other things. Sex workers seem to be kind of low-hanging fruit here that could easily lead to other areas and systemically get the tentacles into other areas where one could open up other investigations and pull more people down. It seems it's kind of an easy way, if you were in law enforcement, to enter into that realm. Get in here, get this information, and then find out more people that you can take down that are tearing apart society and destroying lives. Why don't they look at that more in that way? Why don't we investigate things in that way when it's right in front of us, but it seems a social construct of, oh, these are icky people, it's not worth our time, when really you look into that area, you're going to find so much more if you go down those paths.
So from the law enforcement professionals I know,
yeah,
they are so pro trying to do exactly what you said you need to do, and you're right in a sense that it's low hanging fruit that we know these horrendous things are going on surrounding this industry. So you think that the prosecutions would be easier to do. But the most challenging hurdle, because I've worked with departments that have tried to crack the nut on this, and they are such good, caring. I mean, law enforcement professionals, by and large, we tend to see the negative ones when covering some of these cases because they're the root of some of these cases. But the vast, vast majority of law enforcement professionals are so caring and just compassionate towards everyone, including mm-hmm. the sex trade, because they know how, just like my number showed you, they know where it comes from. So there's a huge amount of compassion. The greatest challenge, Tony, is in every investigation, the most critical thing you need for success is confidential human sources.
Mm-hmm.
Confidential human sources tell you where to focus your subpoenas. They tell you where to focus your technical expertise. They tell you everything you need to know for a case. And this is the most challenging industry to develop confidential human sources in because of fear.
Mm-hmm.
The women involved have such a fear. They have fear of the people that are controlling them, of their pimps or their handlers or whatever they're calling them on their side. And they have fear of law enforcement, that of not trusting them, not to arrest them as well and take them down or turn them in. And so a couple of cases and operations I consulted a number of years ago was actually out in California. And they actually asked me, one of the departments, I think it was LAPD I was working with, they were trying to do just this. They're trying to get better confidential human sources. And it's possible, but you don't develop trust like this. Trust mm-hmm. takes time. Trust takes a pattern of behavior where someone feels they can share with you their most horrendous vulnerabilities that they have, their insecurities, their fears, their traumas, and not be judged, so they can feel safe to share things with you. And that's what it would take in these situations. That takes time. That takes patience. But when you're dealing with then bosses above you that have a high degree in need for speed, we need collars, we need turnover, we need cases and prosecutions like this, it doesn't give the investigator the time he needs to develop that kind of trust to get the kind of sources they need in the sex worker industry.
That's
one of the greatest challenges.
Does that come down to lack of manpower? We don't have enough investigators that can focus on more longer term things where it's going to take longer to build those relationships because there's only so many people for so many crimes. And at the end of the day, the public wants accountability. They want to see the results now, even though it does take time to get them. And there's just not enough resources to focus on this the way that it would produce better results.
There's a few things. There's always a manpower and resources issue, but it also requires a very soft touch, requires really seasoned investigators that have time on the street. They have time doing human interactions. Someone who's a fantastic interviewer knows how to develop compassionate, empathetic rapport without judging. you know, understanding that these are the individuals you're going to be communicating with, then it also requires a vast amount of patience from the prosecution side, from the investigation side, from executive management to say, hey, this is going to be a program. It's going to be a longstanding program. We're going to need time to develop the competent human resources we need to actually make a dent in this. And so it's to me, it'd be a three-pronged approach from those, from that point of view.
I mean, should there be more focus on ways to create essentially like a safe space, if you will, for women who have been trafficked or women who are in this trade, that they can come forward and not have to fear that they're going to be arrested, that they don't have to fear that, okay, they're going to tell their story and it's like, okay, well, go back out there. Good luck. And your pimp can find you and all these people can go after you once you've basically snitched on whoever you are snitching on. More of a safe system where, okay, almost like witness protection to a certain degree of, okay, come in. We are going to protect you going forward. We can get you out of here. We can get you far away from these people where you don't have to worry about your safety. We will relocate you and create a system of that where there can be more sense of safety and coming forward with information that can take the bad guys down rather than this being this, I'm afraid to talk to you because I'm going to go have to live my life here still. And I don't want to go to jail. Not to say to give it a free pass that, you know, nobody can get arrested in this if you're participating, but something where the information they can provide far outweighs any reason to arrest any of these women for what they're doing to try and survive or are being forced into.
You know, I'm going to have a lot of conjecture on this one as well.
Yeah.
I don't have any names or numbers off the top of my head, but there are a large number of departments doing exactly what you just said. And because okay. I know we're going to get some people reaching out to us saying, well, we do it.
Yeah.
And so, and I know they are because I wouldn't even be able to think about it unless I've heard these cases that they are doing it. It's being able to share those best practices amongst other departments. And they do that at conferences and such on this type of thing. And I know we keep saying that women are being arrested for you know, dealing with the sex trade. But believe it or not, so here I am, again, I'm putting my investigator hat on. I'm not about to arrest anyone that's been trafficked, you know, because mm-hmm. if you look at how they got into the trade, it's not that they're doing illegal activities, it's that they were, illegal activity was done against them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of great investigation, great departments are doing just that. They're not arresting women for being trafficked because that's how it started. And so that's why there is a lot of patience. And so law enforcement has seen it. But again, what it takes is I hate using such a flippant term, but it takes flavor of the day because every jurisdiction has a new flavor of the day that we got to make a dent here, or a new politician is trying to get elected. And this was their platform here. That's what it really keeps coming down to and driving where the focus is. It's politicians that are being elected. It's social media or media outlets that are covering certain cases in a certain way. And all of a sudden that becomes the clickbait for someone to focus on this.
Yeah.
So I like keeping things really simple at, you know, from the start point, start at one single point, but this is one of those complex things that there's a lot of wickets that I think need to be aligned here. So let's start at the top. The top is elected officials have to make this their platform, because when they're elected into these positions, that platform will then get trickled down. Because when if a local politician is elected into a position and that becomes their platform, that part of my platform is to end sex trafficking and end human trafficking. Because again, this is not even sex, end human trafficking, because that impacts fentanyl. It impacts the drug trade. It impacts all these other things. So they can tie it there, and then you can have that trickle on down, and you hit all the nuances and tendrils that go out from that. I think that would start making a big difference.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.